Now, here's Mike Buck and Duke Iona on News Radio 830 KHVH.
Oh, you should have seen the LG smile when he heard this. Little Sir Duke. You know, that's one thing we never talked about, the name Duke.
Sir Duke, yes.
You know, Sir Duke. But that's the one thing we never talked about. There's all kinds of things. You know, I've been very active in the Duke Ahanamoku Foundation, and there's all kinds of things about the name Duke. And so remind everybody how Duke Iona got duked.
Well, my dad was a big baseball fan.
Yep.
So the name Duke didn't come from Duke Wayne. It didn't
Sultan
come from
of SWAT.
Yeah, it came from Duke Snyder, who was
Sultan of SWAT.
Brooklyn Dodgers. That's how long ago it was. And so, in fact,
before
I have
LA.
Yeah, I got his autograph ball and
got any jerseys?
No, I don't have his jersey. It was a little before my time.
But you know, being that you're of Hawaiian ancestry and a judge and everything else, how many people thought, oh, you were named after Duke Ahanamoku?
Absolutely.
Everybody,
yeah.
Yeah,
and so I just go along and say, yeah, well, all of the above.
That's my uncle. That's my uncle. Oh, that's the Duke. Yeah. So anyway, how you doing, all right?
I'm doing great. How about you?
We got a lot of stuff to cover, boy, I'm telling you. Last time I got in doing a very interesting conversation with former DLNR director Bill Patey and Leah Hong. Leah Hong with Trust for Public Lands. They're part of that 13-member committee that the governor put together to study the North Shore. That thing seems to be really cooking.
It is. Yeah. They've made tremendous progress in I believe right now they've engaged a lot of I didn't listen to everything they had to say, but I know that they've engaged several different businesses and organizations out there that are interested in this concept of purchasing Turtle Bay.
Right.
So I think everything's confidential, obviously, because you don't discuss those kinds of things publicly.
Well,
at least not
actually,
at this point in time.
No, we were actually made a caveat to that. That's with regards to running the resort.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of community support now. Initially,
oh, yeah.
Initially, there's some skeptics in the community. Oh, wait a minute. Government's going to come up here. Holy smokes, what are we going to have?
I think what it was the concept wasn't quite designed. I shouldn't say not designed, but it wasn't quite described clearly initially by media and other people, because they didn't understand what the governor was what the governor wanted to do at Turtle Bay. So you had some mixed messages out there, but you know, we had that big town hall meeting. I believe it was in March of this year, but I know it was this year. And we had it was attended, greatly attended. There must have been well over 600 people at that town hall meeting. And when the governor put forth what the whole purpose of it was for, I think it was greater understanding on the community's part. And they you know, because their major concern was, that's an economic engine out in the North Shore.
Yeah, you bet.
And the fear was that it was going to be either shut down or the state was going to come in and was going to run it. And obviously the state has no expertise in running anything. And they were going to basically lose any momentum or any economic benefit that they had in the hotel. And thus everybody would be out of a job. So, you know, that was a big – on one side, that was the big concern, and they didn't want that happening. On the other side, it was all about conservation and protecting the country and keeping the country. And so you had basically two groups. And then they had other concerns out there also. The city is going through something right now with these lots out in Kahuku, and they're talking about building these beach lots out there.
Yep.
So that came into the equation.
Yep.
They wanted to throw that in the equation and say, well, how can the state save that also? So it kind of went through a whole, you know, array of different issues. So we took all of that in and we said, this is all going to be addressed by you, the community, through this task force that we're putting together. And so I think that was the defining moment in which everyone came together. Everybody brought their issues. And it was presented to the task force, and the answers have come back. And so now you see much more unity and understanding of what's happening out there, what this initiative is all about. And so as such, you don't hear as much, if you want to call it, challenges and
controversy. Well, you know, I want to, but let's reflect back in the very beginning, because I said earlier in the piece that the governor's speech, the State of the State speech, was a shock to some people, you know, and the way it came out, whenever anybody says anything, particularly here, Duke, and you can comment to this, it's always politics involved. So no matter what the idea is, it matters who had the idea as to what its acceptance is going to be. So the boo birds came flying out of every tree possible, but now they're disappearing because this thing is starting to make some sense. Do you agree? Do you guys get that feeling?
I agree with you exactly. And again, it was because of, like you said, who said it?
Surprise!
And when it was said, and you're right, there was no forewarning on this, that this is something that's being thought of and it's being discussed, and it came out. But actually, it had been. I mean, the governor had been approached on this. It wasn't something she just pulled out of the air and said, oh, you know,
Let's go back a minute. Let's explain. You explain. Right now, we're seeing in the Obama and Clinton struggle for the domination. You got to stump. You got to get out there and everything else. Well, the last thing you want to do is reveal what you're going to speak about, because if you're going to give out a speech before the speech, nobody's going to show up.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, or else the salient points will be downplayed, or the opposition will have too much time to come up with a reason why it's not going to work. So that's why that speech was such an incredible speech, because I was there. I mean, we were all there, and all of a sudden I said, oh. Whoa, what a concept. Who's ever thought of that? What's that all about? You know, I mean, I came right back that day and said, you know what I got from that speech of the governor's? That the North Shore is getting a real good look at conservation and commercialization at the same time.
Well, it's exactly, and it started actually with the purchase of several pieces of property in the state in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Up on the Big Island with the Puna Rainforest, that was number one. And then, of course, Waimea Valley. That was huge. And it culminated, I think, with Pupukea Poumalu.
That's a great example. We talked about that earlier.
The governor was very, really took an active role in that. I'm not saying that she didn't take an active role in the other purchases that I mentioned, but that seems to be the one that captured her heart in regards to what the North Shore was all about and what needed to be done. And so in hearing what the people at Turtle Bay wanted to do, this was something that was already in her mind, and she had just been developing this and said, you know, finally came to the realization that I think this can be done, especially when a foreclosure action was filed on behalf of the creditors for Turtle Bay. And that was kind of the crowning point. And she says, you know, I think this is the right time to do it.
It's all about timing.
It was right around that State of the State speech. And so that's when the idea basically I wouldn't say gave birth, but that's when it was uncovered.
Right.
And when she came out and said that, she was very honest and open about it when she said, I don't have the details on this because I really want to have the community decide really where we're going to go with this, because it's not about us taking over any hotel. It's not about us killing any economic engine that you have out there. It's really about us preserving the lifestyle that we have out on the North Shore here in Oahu, because she looks at
it. What's that worth? It's invaluable.
It is.
I mean, it really is.
And I agree with her. I mean, when people come to Oahu, the North Shore is an attraction, and what's attractive to the North to the people who go out to the North Shore is the surf and the beach and just that open space that we have out there. Mm-hmm. And that's what hit her when she went up to Pupukea Poumalu and saw that landscape and said, this is the North Shore, no doubt about it. And so that's what Turtle Bay was to her also. I wouldn't say that Turtle Bay is necessarily pristine in the sense that it's not touched. We know it is touched.
Sure.
And we also know that for that economic engine to continue and probably to be more prosperous, we're going to have to maybe enlarge that footprint a little. And that's kind of some of the issues that are popping up right now.
Glad to find out that in the task force, I mean, Mr. Gill from the union is there to represent the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The tree huggers are there to represent that. And the state's there, and there's a lot of players, and I think that the timbre of the meetings has changed. I mean, I don't want to necessarily dwell our whole program on that today, LG, but suffice it to say that it looks like a win-win. But here's my last question, and that is, I asked Bill Patey this, because everything takes slow wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it goes as the governor suggested that she wanted to go, it won't happen during her administration.
I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way.
What was Bill's response?
Well, he said that, you know, that obviously they don't want to keep meeting forever.
Yeah,
this task force has a lifespan. but that he didn't know whether it would be able to be, the whole theory would be able to be completed substantially before the end of the governor's term, which would mean that, well, if somebody else going in was opposed to it, it may change things around. But it looks now, though, as though there isn't too much opposition.
No, I don't see see much opposition. You got every representative in the area is in favor of it. You saw what the Senator He and Representative Maguire and Representative Myers and everybody else, Councilman De La Cruz, they're all in favor of it. And there is no strong opposition to it. I guess what's going to happen is when it's all in the details, as
Well, that's what Bill Patey suggested. It. He says there's lots and lots of nuts and bolts that got to be put into place.
And when that unveils itself. Now we'll see. But I'm not too sure that it will go beyond her administration. Yeah. I will tell you that much.
Okay, we got plenty more to come, including your participation. If you'd like to join us, talk to the LG. We are done talking about the North Shore unless there's something that comes up that you want to know. We got a lot of other things on the plate, including the front page story in the newspaper today and more as we continue talk story with Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona. See, if you were like me and Duke, you'd be singing along with us. And that reminds you, it's the Makaha Sons of Nehiha.
There you go.
Skippy and Israel, Moon, Brother Moon, and the boys. Take a walk in the country. Well, you know, when you talk about country here on Oahu, Duke, you're always talking about Waimanalo and the leeward side and the North Shore.
That's it.
And keep the country country. Okay, let's shift gears. Some of you may have seen, like I did, on the front page of the paper this morning, this thing that we talked about a couple weeks back. This device that you got to breathe into if you've had a DUI conviction, and it's going to identify you as you, and it's going to allow you to or not allow you to drive your car. And it truly seems to be in the step in the right direction. There are 40 states with some part of this in there. And I remember, Duke, that we talked about this a long time ago.
We did.
And all of a sudden, here comes out on the front page. So there was a part of the story said, well, now it goes up to the governor's desk. And she has until July the 8th.
July 8th, right.
To sign off on it or to sign against it. Now, it doesn't mean any law yet. It just paves the way. Obviously, this is a pretty big deal, but... And I'm going to second guess that as a individual you're in favor of this because it's something that's near and dear to you, and that's DUIs.
Oh, absolutely,
particularly young people.
Absolutely, we'd actually submitted this a few years ago, but in any event, it came up this year, and really what you just said was true. It's going to become law. And I believe the governor has every intention of signing this bill. We haven't heard anything. Any opposition to it really at this point in time.
What I want to comment though is every single thing you talk about, it's just like when you're talking about the speech of the state of the state speech. The minute you say anybody says anything, all the boo birds come out and say, Yeah, but. What about, you know, if your brother or your mother or your friend breathes into the thing for you, or if you take somebody else's car, well of course there's some loopholes. But generally, isn't it designed to just make people think about driving drunk?
Well, think about it. I mean, you got this thing on your car. Yeah. And if that's
not a reminder that you screwed up.
I mean, you got to have some faith in human beings having some kind of standard of morals. I mean, you know, so you see it when you're driving. And if you're going to get around it or try to get around it by having somebody else blowing it, and that person's got to have some morals also. I mean, you know, let's be honest about this. I mean, if people are going to go to that extent, well, you're not going to stop drunk driving. But this is it's a great tool. It's a great deterrent, I think. But more importantly, it puts people, like you said, on notice of where they are in their lives in regards to drinking and driving. And that's what you got to do. You got to change this culture once and for all, and this is one way you're going to do it. Now, what I like about this at this point in time with this technology is that it's advanced to the point that you just mentioned. One of the flaws that they had initially with this machine was someone else could blow into it.
Right, that's number one concern.
Exactly, but now technology has advanced to where now you identify it by picture, and I believe there's some that you can do fingerprints, but I'm not quite sure on that one. That's what I heard, but I'm not quite sure. But the one that they had in the paper this morning was by photo identification.
Right. So in other words, but my first thought was as a but what if you're having a bad hair day and the thing doesn't recognize you? You know, what if you look bus up all of a sudden?
Technology, yeah, you know. You so that means your car doesn't start. You got to go catch the taxi or whatever it is. But you know, then it goes back again. We just talked about morals and standards. Then it goes back again. Well, how did I get in this mess in the first place, right? And so if you can't accept that, then well, you know, I'm sorry, but you got yourself in this mess in the first place.
But, well, like I said, there's all kinds of loopholes. But the only thing that I really want to talk about, and we can. We could probably debate, and gang out there, you want to talk about this, the number is 521-8383. That's not what I was setting up. What I was setting up is what's your gut feeling, because I have my opinion as to who should pay for it. Because obviously you don't want the taxpayers to pay for it. I think that this rests squarely on the shoulders of the offender. That if he's going to have this thing mandatorily, he's got the option of not driving. He doesn't have to machine have the thing put in his car if he's not going to drive anymore. But if he wants to drive... And from what I understand, number one, there's a cost of the equipment, and then there's like a monthly fee because it's all connected to a computer. It's not just your car and done.
That's right. It's the monitoring of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. No, and this is something that I've stated, and this is why you have some controversy on it right now, and you have a task force. So what this law is going to do, it's going to send it, it's submitted to the task force to answer some of these questions that you just posed, and one of them is just that, who's going to pay for it, and when is it going to be applied? In other words, first offense, second offense, third offense, and I'm a proponent of, and I've said this before, and I will continue to say it. In my mind, based on my experience in the court system, is that drunk drivers are such that their behavior can be changed through punishment, through laws of this nature. In other words. They are the type of person that will modify their behavior if they're punished severely the first time.
That's a great point because, I mean, look, we were talking off the air. I don't have time to read 100 blogs. Mm-hmm. I barely have time to read the story. But one of the first blogs says, hey, what are we doing all that for? Why don't we do what we said we're going to do before? You drive drunk, you lose your car.
Absolutely.
On the spot, take the car away.
I'm a proponent for that also. I'm a proponent that... In the first offense that you have, that you get jail time and you get serious jail time. Yeah. And if it impinges upon you or in some way takes away, gets you terminated from your job, well, you know, that's the nature of it all. Because, like I said, drunk drivers are a different breed. They're not criminals. They don't have that cognitive thinking like a lot of criminals have. So they're more – they are – intellectual, and they intellectualize what their behavior is all about. I'm talking in general. I'm not talking about, you know, everyone. Of course, that's, you know, because none of the phones are going to light up and everything. But what I mean is that they can be changed and it can be deterred. Because I'll tell you, in the courtroom, I've seen it. I don't know. This is anecdotal, but it seemed like on the third conviction, I had a fatality. Almost every neg homo, and then I had some manslaughter cases where there was a fatality. It seems to be their third conviction for drunk driving. And if you look at our laws, they're all designed that way for the third offense.
Yeah.
So in the third offense, you get the ultimate sanction. Yeah, you get the jail.
That's too late.
It's too late. Guys are dead. And so I've always said, if this had happened the first time, you know, what would have happened? What would have happened was you would have changed your behavior because your insurance would have gone out the roof from day one. You would have been put in jail. You would have lost your car. You would have something like this in your car, an interlock system like this in your car, and that has to modify everything. So in answer to your question, yes, I believe that the defendant should pay. Now, they're talking about an indigent fund. In other words, for people who can't afford this system.
Right.
But yet they can afford
the cocktails and they can afford a car.
Exactly. And if you read the article, it says it comes down to approximately $3 a day, $2 a day is what you would be paying.
That's what the article said, one beer.
And the other thing is then don't drive.
Yeah.
There's
always a question that comes up. Let's say that right now there's 1,000 pending cases in the court system about DUI, guilty, not guilty, whatever. That's probably pretty good. Isn't it pretty simple? Let's say that you come up with a law, and it says, and that law takes effect as of June 1st. So that means that everybody in the site, anybody that can stand up and breathe, knows that there's a new law about drinking. So you are taking your own responsibility. In other words, come June 1st, if you drive drunk, you're going to lose your car, you're going to go to jail, whatever it is. That's the price you got to pay.
Absolutely.
I don't think we'd have to have too many June 1st if there was a law like that before cleaning up the problem.
I agree. And I've always been, like I said, a proponent on tough sanctions and penalties on people who drink and drive, because it is a choice. You are choosing to get drunk, first of all, and then you're choosing to get in that car, which we all know is a 5,000-pound weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah, there you go.
And,
really.
And there you go. And so why are we going to feel any type of compassion for someone who even takes that risk?
Yep.
You have the car. That means that's an asset. And by the way, if you have a car and you own a car in this day and age, that means that you can afford the gas that goes into it, which we know is above $4 a gallon right now.
And you know what else? There's something. There's always the yeah, but guys come up. We're going to be late to the news, I know. But there's a guy that says, well, you know, why should the car automatically get confiscated? Well, because the owner of the car should understand if there's a chance that I loan my car to you and you're drinking, that I might lose my car.
Absolutely.
I would have second thoughts about saying, yeah, no problem, Duke, go ahead. Because I think, wait a minute, if they take my car, what, you're going to pay for my car?
Oh, you know, you didn't let me finish off on this, but one is you can pay for the price of gas. You can pay for the registration now, which is getting extremely high.
Yep.
And more importantly, you can pay for insurance, because all of that are requirements before you can even drive a car. So, and then you own the car itself. And so some of you might have payments on it. It might be yours. I don't know. But anyway, it's an asset right there. So don't tell me you can't pay for a system such as this.
Let's take a quick telephone call, even though we're really late for the news already. Jim's on the H1 in a cell to talk about this device real quick. Hello, Jim.
Hey, happy birthday, Lieutenant Governor.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Hey, you know, it sounds like this device would keep people from stealing your car, too, because it wouldn't recognize it.
Well, that's a good point. Hey, watch a minute. That's a good point.
You know what?
It's like the club, you know?
Yeah, it's only better because it has to look at
them. Isn't that funny? I wonder if you would be able to. I guess you couldn't disable it. What if your daughter's going to drive the car? See, that's a great question.
I'm hoping that you're absolutely right on that, because if it wasn't, we'll all be embarrassed.
Yeah.
If you could somehow hotwire this baby, you know, and bypass the interlock system, we'd be in trouble. No, I think you're right.
That's really interesting.
I think you're right, yeah.
Hey, we're going to develop that after the news. Jim, thanks very much for your call. Okay, you know, we got to just widen it out a little bit so that we can make room for you. 521-8383 is the number. A couple of things we want to talk about. There was a story in Pacific Business News today, Duke, about the price of homes on Oahu. The sales are down 30%, but the prices are stable.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like, for all intents and purposes, this big panic that's going on in the mainland is not affecting us the same way. But yet when you look at the rising cost of fuel and you look at the less tourism that's coming in and everything else, we do need to look at austerity. We do need to look at belt tightening. There are some concerns at the legislature level that our tax collections are going to be so much less, but yet they're not yet.
They're not so much less.
Yeah.
They're less. And and you know, the big shock was Aloha and ATA pulling out. That obviously affected our tourism industry in regards to revenue. But overall, it's remained. I don't want to say flat, but it's been level. I guess the same thing, flat level. It's at that point right now. But you're right, we're doing well because we still have construction. Construction is fairly healthy in the state of Hawaii. We have a lot more businesses that are doing well globally. So you know, that's income coming in. And of course, as you just mentioned, the housing market is not even at that point where it's a crisis situation.
Yeah.
The fact that you have less people buying is because people are exactly what you're saying. They're being more frugal. They're trying to wait it out. They're waiting to see if it will in fact come down. But when you see prices remaining the same, that says something to the investor. So we'll see. We'll see how this plays out
in
the next few months.
As you know, we've talked about this. My wife's a realtor, and everybody asks her, how's business? Well, you don't want to lie.
Yeah.
But she can't say business is lousy because
right.
It's not.
It's
business
not.
Is business. By the way, we'll talk about this when we come back from a phone call, but PBN also today has a story about how the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations is going to be handling a grant from the federal government. $3.2 million bucks of it is going to be going to 710 workers that were affected by the airline layoffs. So that means that you guys have been working hard on getting some federal help with this.
Yes. Yeah. And it's all for what you'd call transitioning, workforce development into different industries and retraining.
Okay, let's go to the phones. 521-8383 is our number. We got Henry in Honolulu. Hello there, Henry.
Hi, Governor, Lieutenant Governor.
Yes.
I had a question. On these people that get arrested for DUI, is it possible that the bar or restaurant or wherever they last drank could be responsible for paying for the interlock system?
Absolutely. Oh, you mean the interlock system?
Yeah, sure, because, it would make them be more aware of over-serving people who might end up going up on our roads and getting into accidents. So if they're responsible, if they get a liability where they have to pay for this interlock, for anybody that's caught DUI and it can be determined they left from their establishment, maybe that would make people more conscious about over-serving.
Well, that's a good point, and there's merit to it. The we do have right now laws that would make bars and social host responsibility, people who host these parties responsible if someone that drank at their establishment or at their homes get into an accident and they cause damage and or death or serious injury to someone else, they can be held responsible. This is a little different, and you're gonna have people. You're gonna have to trace this back again to exactly where it happened. And most of these DUI cases that we have, it's really just about where they are when they're caught. In other words, what is their blood alcohol level when they're caught? Very, very seldom does it even get to the point of where have you been drinking, simply because that's not the issue with the police officers. So you're looking at probably an enforcement type of issue that you would have here. It's not impossible.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm from Maui, so in Maui, it's a routine question that's asked. Whenever somebody's picked up for DUI, mm-hmm. the liquor inspector goes down to the lockup, the cell block, and they question the arrestee, and they ask him, where were you drinking last? That's a routine question that's asked.
That's actually
I grew up on Oahu.
Yeah, I remember that from Maui days. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine, that happened to him, and he got picked up as a tourist on Maui with a rental car for DUI, and he had all kinds of people coming down there.
The liquor commission does that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
The liquor inspectors at the liquor commission, and they ask that question routinely. And, today with people using debit cards, credit cards, you can always prove, where somebody's been drinking.
No, you're right. I'm not arguing the point. All I'm saying is it's going to be an issue in regards to enforcement and how far does that go. And then you got to bring in the establishment also to verify that, because person saying that I was drinking at O'Toole's doesn't necessarily mean they were drinking at O'Toole's. So it is a little bit more cumbersome in that respect, and maybe might be a little bit more costly, but. That's a concept. That's something that maybe this task force is going to be thinking about. But I just firmly believe that it's not only is it efficient and much easier, but the responsibility truly lies with the person that's drinking a booze.
And that's where the cost
should be.
Henry, I'm with you, but let me tell you something. Not only the bars, but this rule that the LG was talking about would also be for you and I. If we had a party and somebody got too tanked, the problem is sometimes – I mean, unless it's really obvious, sometimes people can really shield how they really are in somebody's home or in a bar. And then
go to somebody's house and you're drinking 12 beers, even if I'm walking straight, I would question whether that guy was sober.
Yeah, but that means now that you have a party, you got to count how much people are drinking.
Well, you know what? That's part of social responsibility.
You could be right,
If you're going to say people should be responsible, but you don't train people to act responsibly, and that's what the society is. You look at our lawmakers. We have how many lawmakers being picked up for DUI? They should know better. They're the ones that made the law. But how come they get picked up for DUI? Because our social system allows people to drink. We condone drinking. We condone over-drinking. And that's why people are trained to drink and drive. So you got to train them not to drink and drive.
Good one, Henry. Thanks for the call. Sounds like you ought to have him on a task force.
Oh, I agree. I agree with what...
It is about... You look at... Lieutenant Governor, you've talked about this a million times, and people out there, you know this. it really is about individual responsibility. How many excuses do we have to make for our friends, neighbors, and relatives that can't handle whatever it is? Food, whiskey, drugs, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's all about individual responsibility.
It's all about personal responsibility. And that's why I agree with Henry. That's a concept. It has merit to it. To me, it's just too cumbersome. And, again, the responsibility lies with the person that's drinking. Yep. And that's where the cost should lie.
Okay, so there you go. It truly is. It's actually a shame. And I know that in your position on the bench that you see the ruin of so many families. I mean, the drinker's family as well. Look at the onus of having a kid have it published that his dad's a drunk driver. He goes to school, your dad's a drunk, huh?
Yeah, that was another concept that we talked about, is publishing these names. Every month you have basically like a lineup, and you say, okay, these are the drunk drivers for the month, with the pictures, as you stated. You could do that, public shame, right, the scarlet letter. But it comes down, as Henry just mentioned, it all comes down to us as a society and how we view this. And I've said this many times, and I'll keep saying it again, it's about changing this culture that we have with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And the kids get it. I mean, when I go out and I speak to fifth graders, I target fifth graders for drinking, they always ask this very simple question, Mike, if alcohol is so bad for you and it destroys your brain basically and your brain development, and it's basically poison, then why do we sell it?
Exactly.
Why are we
hard to look at that question?
Why are we drinking alcohol?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's the question.
Yep, yep.
That's the question. So anyway,
that's where it goes. And you know, and that's all right. Real quickly before the break and traffic, let's go to Mark in Kapolei. Hello, Mark.
Hey, I wanted to ask the Lieutenant Governor a quick question.
Sure.
Why it seems like in Hawaii they don't enforce the HOV lane. I'm sitting on H1 and there's plenty of people in the HOV lane with just one person in the car.
Mark, I wish I could answer that question for you. It's a matter of law enforcement, and right now law enforcement on the H1 is the Honolulu Police Department. I know they try to do it. They do it periodically, and it doesn't seem to work because people don't get the message. I've been in an HOV lane also many times where I've seen that, and it just frustrates me also. So I'm with you. It's a matter of resources, again, getting enough people out there. I've always been a proponent of having our sheriffs become what I would call highway patrol officers so that they could just basically concentrate on just traffic enforcement on the freeways, and because we don't have much freeway miles. And I've thrown that out, and I'm waiting for people to say, yeah, let's do it. Let's get our sheriffs involved on that. But it comes down to resources, again, money and everything else. So it's not that easy. But I agree, and we need to get these people out of there. So, you know,
I mean,
thank you for calling.
With a $200 fine, I think if it was enforced for a couple of days and people saw, I mean, it'd be a great income for the state. Plus, you know, the people that have more than one person would actually be using the lane.
Well, yeah. Mark, you know, not only that, but it'd be the last time you did it if you got a ticket.
I agree. And I know in D.C. they take photos and just mail the tickets to the people. They don't even have to pull them over, and I think that would quickly change.
Uh-oh. That sounds like Van Cam. We're late for a break, my friend. Thanks very much. We'll return to that. That's a great point. That's way better than happy birthday to you.
Yeah, I think so. Especially at my age.
So what's the plan on the candles? I mean, you're going to call the HFD?
Oh, you're funny, yeah. No, we're going to have two candles.
Yeah, that's
one,
right.
One and one, one.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, that's good. That's good. Milestones. Let's talk about a few milestones. We got a few things to go. I was disturbed, and I mentioned to you when you first came in, I said, you know, Duke, there were some kids that really excelled, and there was a special day to acknowledge them in athletics, and they didn't get the coverage that a shoplifter would have got. You know, I mean, let's talk a little bit about these children that went far and above all of their counterparts to achieve recognition.
We recognized four of our Hawaii high school football players last week.
Four.
Yep. Who were nominated to play in the U.S. Army All-American Bowl in January of next year, which is actually 2009.
Really cool.
Right around the
What an honor.
Yeah. Out of 7,000 football players across the country, they've nominated 400. And mm-hmm. we have four of our Hawaii high school football players who mm-hmm. have been nominated for this final cut.
Right.
So you have 4 out of 400, and they're gonna chop that down to 84, I believe. And so the two are from Punahou. One is Dalton Hilliard. He's a running back, I believe. The other is Monte Teo, who's a multi-sport athlete, just a tremendous athlete. The other is from Kahuku, Dre Galeai, who I believe was a safety. And the last is a offensive lineman from Kapolei, Stan Hasiak.
What an honor. Huh?
I mean, very,
they
very
must have been so proud.
Let me tell you, it's to just think about that. 7,000 athletes, football players were considered, down to 400. And this is the first time we've ever had four from Hawaii.
Yeah.
So just a tremendous honor. I also had the opportunity to go to St. Andrew's Priory last week to recognize their rocketry team. It's they participated in this.
Oh, yeah, wait. We got it. This is a great story.
Yeah.
Because if you would have thought, okay, rocketry. Okay, Iolani, Punahou, St. Louis, Kamehameha, St. Andrews.
St. Andrews Priory.
Really cool.
A group of, I believe it was 7 girls.
Yep.
It's called the Team America Rocketry Challenge, and it's a national competition. You got about 300 and – oh, I take that back. There were over 600 schools that competed nationwide.
Gee whiz.
And they made it to the top 100. First time Hawaii's ever had an entry into this national contest. And the contest is fairly simple in concept. You build a rocket that can go 750 feet, I believe, but that's not that's a minimum it has to go.
Yeah,
but
right.
But the time is 45 seconds, so it has to be in the air for 45 seconds.
That's a long time.
The payload, in other words, what they're carrying, are 2 raw eggs, and so it has to return back to Earth
with the raw eggs
intact,
unbroken.
Yes, unbroken. So
everybody can put them up, but not too many guys can bring them down, right?
Exactly. So, unfortunately, our girls, I think it was the second round. I can't believe I remember what round it is, but the eggs scrambled.
Yeah,
so they got out of the competition. But they won 2 of the most prestigious prizes that you can get for this competition. One was called the communication prize. In other words, you have to present your project to a panel of judges, and they came away with first prize on that. So they have communication skills.
Yeah.
And the other, I know everybody's going to be proud of this, it was the Spirit Award. So they went up there and they showed everybody what Aloha was all about.
You know, there are some naysayers about these rockets because there are a couple of stores selling these parts. And these kids would go in the parks. And some of these things are almost like intercontinental ballistic missiles. some of them are big.
Yeah.
So, and you know, but the thing is to bring them down.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them have, parachutes. And that's what this one is, right?
Absolutely,
get up, you get to the peak. And then when it comes down, somehow this thing deploys and down it floats.
Right. Remember, you got 45 seconds.
Yeah.
But the thing, the difference is now this is part of our push and the DOE now also to inspire our children to get involved in STEM skills, science, technology, engineering, and math, because we want our students, we want more engineers to come out of Hawaii.
Well, you know, we take a look at the robotics thing. And then you take a look at this rocketry thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's high tech. And
to have
our kids be able to show up like that nationally, that's a great feather in the cap of everybody.
And believe
that
it or not,
them.
One of those members wants to be an astronaut.
There you go. That would be just really cool.
Oh, that's really cool. Yep.
Yeah. Can you imagine how proud the Onizuka family would be?
Absolutely.
You know, that
absolutely. In fact, I just was with Claude this past weekend. Yeah. Great guy.
Okay, it is time for the Fox News. That means we've run out of time with the LG. Nice seeing you again, my friend.
Yes, sir.
See you next time.
Aloha.